Welcome to Waking Up with Melissa, a podcast that takes a deep dive into personal development, spirituality, and how to grow your online business. I'm your host, Melissa Ruiz, a spiritual and mindset business coach for all conscious healers out there. Stay tuned every week while I share insight on how to balance your business and also stay in alignment with your higher self. I truly feel that we all uniquely possess all the things we are seeking if we simply allow ourselves to surrender, to be present, and to take action in our lives.
Welcome back to another podcast on Waking Up with Melissa. We have a beautiful guest who has a platform by the name of Latinx Parenting, who believes passionately in shifting the paradigm of raising children towards creating a trauma-informed, healing-centered, nonviolent, and culture-sustaining approach where Latinx families can nurture connections in their homes, which, by the way, is super important. And I'm going to continue to pull this thread because it's actually the reason why we're even here having this conversation. And cultures and ways that support individual and families' intergenerational collective healing. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
I'm so glad you're here. I just want to introduce our audience to how we even met. By the way, we had a mutual connection. Shout out to June, one of our past clients who just raved about your work, honestly. Like, I'm just going to get to the heart of the nature of us being here. She's like, you have to get to know Leslie. She's doing amazing stuff in this community. And I had been following you for a while now. So I'm so blessed and honored to be having this deeper conversation with you because we need the representation. We need to have these deeper conversations about our Latino and Latinx communities. So, Leslie, can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in this work?
Yeah. And definitely shout out to June, who is incredible. And I love her so much. And we're still tight. And I was very, very excited to meet you, too. I had started following you because she shared with me your amazing work. So I wanted to share my appreciations to her and to you for even having a space like this. I'm very, very deeply honored to be here. How did I get started in the work? Well, I was born in 1980. No, I'm just kidding.
Right? Let me take you back to the day I was born.
Honestly, I think that this work started even in previous generations for me. I think that a lot of us have moved into the kind of work that we do, which is healing-centered and is heart-centered, because we have allowed ourselves to reflect on everything that the past generations maybe did not have access to. And so, you know, as a child, I didn't have the best relationship growing up with my mom. She wasn't very connected to herself in the ways that I would want any parent to be connected to themselves. She was a Mexican immigrant that came here when she was 14 years old, and she started working right away. So her childhood was cut short pretty early on, and there was a lot that happened to her that really was what prevented her from being the kind of parent that I may have needed. There was a lot that she did do right, and I talk about the cycles that she has broken also a lot, because I think every generation has broken certain cycles and certain patterns and behaviors. And so we don't want to discount that or say that that's not valuable and meaningful too. But I really came face to face with my own childhood when I got pregnant. I got pregnant in 2011. I was a very young mom. I was 23 years old when I found out I was pregnant. And I decided, let's do this. But I quickly realized that I don't know anything about how to parent. I know a whole lot about how not to parent. Like, I know a whole lot about the kind of relationship I don't want to have with this child. I know a whole lot about, you know, what not to do. And unfortunately, you know, I was able to go to college and to learn about brain development and child development. And when I got pregnant, I was a preschool teacher. And so I switched into parenting mode and I started learning that there were other ways. But then I started feeling myself get really frustrated that wasn't what I was seeing in my family of origin. Mind you, my mom is one of 12 children, all of whom, except for one, migrated here between the 70s and 80s. And so I'm looking around at my family, my extended family, my tios, my tias, and I'm reading these parenting books. And I'm like, there's a really big gap here. Like, there's something missing from each of these, right? In my family, there's the connection to the child missing. Like, we had happy childhoods, and I say that like with air quotes, like we had as happy childhoods, me and my cousins, as we could have, but we did experience a lot of violence, physical violence, verbal violence, emotional violence, spiritual violence, a lot of violation of our sovereignty, of our sacredness, of our right to safety, right? And so that was a lot of violence. And so I'm reading these parenting books, I'm like, this sounds really great and I love it, but I don't see my culture in here. I don't see anything about my family in here. Like, this seems like something I could practice without the stressors that maybe my family had to encounter. And so, you know, I didn't have words around systemic oppression at that time, right? I didn't necessarily speak very openly about cultural trauma and things like that, ancestral trauma and things like that. So I didn't have this language. This is like, you know, where I kind of started developing at least my curiosities about why my family didn't have access to this. And now suddenly I do, being married to a white man who, you know, has made it so that I don't have to work for a couple years, you know, really stepping into this like privilege in my mind at that time, having been like saved by a white family. And like, oh, you pulled me out of my culture. Thank you. My culture of woundedness and my culture of trauma and my culture of hurt and my culture of shame. Which is in my mind, I think subconsciously, how we see our families and our culture if we're not being told, you know, the true history and what's actually happened. And so I'm raising my daughter and I'm like super lonely. And I'm like, I know for sure I want to let my baby sleep in my bed. I know for sure I want to carry them on my body. Like, I know I want to use those, you know, those woven wraps. I know I want to cloth diaper. I know I want to breastfeed. I know I want to practice what at the time I would call it attachment parenting, which it's Indigenous parenting.
Okay.
But I was like, you know, trying to search for other people. And I didn't see any others that were practicing this except for other white mothers. Mm. And I identify as a Chicana, as a Latina, as a first generation Mexican American, but I fit in very easily with this group because I'm lighter skinned, right? And so it didn't feel weird at the time. I think progressively I started feeling a little weird, and I was like, there's certain parts of myself I feel like I have to hide in order to be in this space. And that created a tension for me. And that tension, together with the frustration, together with having worked in agencies where the content that they were sharing with the parents in those organizations was bullshit. Like, it was not meant for us, and it was not something that was going to benefit us as a culture in the long run, right? And so all of these observations started piling and piling in the personal, in the professional, in the cultural, in the spiritual, you know, because I had been raised Catholic too. And I was like, oh shit, there's a lot to unlearn here. And so everything started just taking form for me. And it wasn't until my second daughter was born in 2017. And I realized that being in nonprofit work was making me sick mentally, yes. Like really, really ill, you know, to the point where I wanted to die and really considered it one weekend. I was like, and I was pregnant, mind you, I was pregnant with a baby. And so the shame and the guilt of like having been pregnant when you're experiencing that. And my partner at the time, you know, he was like, you can't go back. You can't go back to this environment. But when I had her, I felt really, really strongly that I needed to be in community again, that I needed to be working with parents again. I had been trained in 2013 as a parent educator. I had been working with parents from that year on. And it was what gave me the most life. Like, it was what gave me the most just like juiciness. You know, like, it just felt like when I was working with specifically Latino parents, I was like, this is home to me right now. Like, these are my, yes, like, these are my tías, these are my tíos. And I was working with all kinds of different groups. But in that, I was able to see some of the differences, right? Like, working in Newport Beach with like a group of white parents is very different to working with a group of in private school parents, right, in Newport Beach, to working with public school parents who are Spanish speaking, primarily Spanish speaking, and are below the poverty line, right? And so I started kind of seeing that and recognizing that, like, my sensation was I'm being pulled into working specifically with my community. And so in 2018, I founded Latinx Parenting. I'm in my master bedroom right now. The first class that I ran as Latinx Parenting was in this bedroom. My partner, in the morning, we would wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and he would move the mattress out and all of our furniture. And I would go to the party supply store and I would get these white plastic chairs and set them up and, you know, set up my little easel. And people came. There was like 10 or 12 people that came and showed up. And so that, you know, I was like, okay, I think there's something here. I think I might actually be able to do this on my own without the umbrella of a nonprofit or without the umbrella of a curriculum that isn't built for the community. And that's kind of how Latinx Parenting was birthed. And that was 5 years ago.
Oh my God. You know, one thing that really sticks out is just using what you have. And I think in general, so many people hold themselves back because they are waiting. They're waiting for the perfect moment. They're waiting until they get everything perfectly curated and they have the ability to have their own office. But, you know, I was actually just having this conversation, honest conversation with all of our groups this week. And I said to them, because they're all healers, mainly 90% of our audience is BIPOC, LGBTQ beings. And I was asking them, remember, this is about other people, right? Like, this work that we're doing is about helping other beautiful souls, right? Let's get back to the heart. And what is it that we're doing? Stop playing around with these algorithms and waiting for yourself to have all of the things. I remember when I started, I literally started recording videos in my car. Way before this was cool on TikTok, it was the only place that I was able to have some privacy. I wasn't confident enough to like record these things in front of my partner at the time. So I was like sneaking in my car, doing these trainings. And it's such a testament to the work. It's such a testament to when you have something in your heart, when you have that dharma, when something is pulling you, you just go and you forget about all of this shit. I love this. You went to Party City. You got the chairs. Like,
yes.
Oh,
yeah. I was like, the work cannot wait. I'm looking around at my community. Mind you, you know, I'm looking around at Santana. Santana is 78% Latino. There are a lot of houseless folks around here. There's a lot of people that are sleeping on the street right around the corner from where I live right now. My kids are seeing that, you know, like there's pain and there's woundedness basically everywhere I look in my city. And that feels urgent. Like that feels very, to me, as somebody that kind of sees the larger vision, both backwards and forward, right? Where I can see like, okay, this is how we've gotten here. And then this is what needs to happen in order for us to get over there in 7 generations or however many. Like, this is something that we cannot wait on. What I do, and I think what many healers are doing, is also about social justice. You know, like, this is about reclamation. This is about restoration of what we always deserved, right? And that is the recognition that there is no waiting necessarily to show up authentically, right? You can't wait to show up authentically because other people are waiting for you to. You know, other people are really ready to like hear what the message is. And that is something that I found by founding Latinx Parenting. I was like, holy shit, I blew up really fast. You know, like to me, it felt very fast. I didn't imagine. I was like, I'm good with the 10 followers. Or back then I was like, just 10, just give me 10,000 so I can do swipe up feature on Instagram.
Yes, when that was a thing.
When that was a thing. And then all of a sudden they were like, everybody can do it. I'm just like, all of that, you know, all of that wanting to have the swipe up feature. I'm like, para qué? Like, for what? You know, if I'm going to be doing the work anyway. And so, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like, there's no ready. Like, ready is now.
And I just want to quote what you just said. The work cannot wait. And, you know, I want to bring in our ancestors for a moment because there's so much honor. There's so much honor in the beings that came before us. And my grandmother recently transitioned 2 weeks ago. And there was this moment where I was having with myself and I was praying and I said, oh my fucking God, like you were the first, like you were the first person to come to this country. She already had my mom, who was the oldest of eight in Ecuador. And like, you're a bad bitch. Like, you came here. It's such a Latino story too, to leave your children in their country. And of course, they have to move through the trauma that gets caused because of that. But like, you were that one. You were that one that came here by yourself to figure it out. And so every generation, it gets better. I look at my nieces and nephew, I'm like, tú no sabes nada. You don't even know the language, okay? But it gets better. The quality of the life gets better. The education, you know, my older sister being the first person to graduate college, to me, I think that's gnarly. I look at my friends and I tell them this and they're like, what? What? You're only the second person. I'm like, yeah, you don't realize that these things are such a privilege. And so I want to bring in forgiveness to this conversation, right? Because we talked about the honor that they had to endure, but what is the forgiveness work that we have to do in order for us to step forward and do things different? Because although so much has been done right, I don't want to say there's anything wrong, but because of the hardship, because of the trauma, like, let's just have an honest conversation. Like, because of all of those things, kids, us, didn't have the most healthiest upbringing. Is that safe to say?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Forgiveness is tough. There's never going to be a situation in which I tell anybody that they have to forgive somebody. It's such a personal process and such an intimate journey. I think that every person has to, sometimes the Spanish words come to me, where they have to lidiar, they have to engage with this process of forgiveness at a pace that feels gentle to them. Because also in the cultura is the, you have to forgive, it's your mom, or you have to forgive, it's your tío, you know, it doesn't matter that he may have molested you when you were four, he's your tío, right? And so there's this, all these preservations of values that sometimes make it so that we feel like we have to forgive. Forgiveness, and I'll speak to my story, like, it has been something that for me has been worth moving into, because the anger, the resentment, the contraction in the body that I feel whenever I think about, you know, anybody hurting any child, right? It started with the reflections of me being hurt as a child, and it grew to the recognition that nobody deserves violence, right? That no child ever deserved violence. I did not deserve violence. And so when you look at who is perpetuating that violence, you look at your caregivers or your parents or your teachers or whoever it was, and it's very easy for us to feel that rage and that resentment. And that's a part of the healing process, right? Like, really befriending your anger is a part of the healing process. And so sometimes that anger can dim down to a little candle flame, and sometimes it's a raging, you know, roaring forest fire. Like, so I think that you have to kind of balance the anger, the honoring of the inner child, of the experience of the child, with how you see your parents, right? And when I'm working with groups, it's really interesting because people will name some of the harm that was done, and then they'll say, but my parents were great. But I had a really great childhood. But it's okay because I grew up and I'm fine, right? And so there's all these like, but, right? And it's like, I think what we're trying to do by decolonizing parenting overall is to recognize that you could have not received what you needed as a child. And also, that doesn't make your parents any less deserving of, you know, the respect that they deserved as children too. Because it's very, very unlikely that if you were subject to harm as a child, that your parents weren't. And so I've tended to look at my mom and recognize that it's not just you as an adult, it's you as a dark brown woman who migrated here as a 14-year-old, who experienced a lot of physical and sexual trauma, right? Like, this is the chingona abuelita of yours too, right? That still managed to put food on the table, that still managed to put a roof over our head, that worked multiple jobs, that worked dangerous jobs. You know, like, she would work in factories and like, she would come down and like all kinds of shit. So I think that I look at her and I'm like, you deserved so much better. You deserved to be the kind of parent that I needed, but that wasn't what was given to you by the systems that you grew up in, you know, by the history that you had to grapple with. But so many of our elders aren't even aware of that, right? They're just like, well, it's just life, right? And I think for us, I'm so glad that you named the privilege, because it is a privilege to reflect. It is a privilege to have the space to process. You know, people are like, oh, journal. And I'm just like, how can I say that to like a mom that has multiple jobs and she's just trying to survive, you know? And so I think for me, it's been a lot of like contextualizing and not pathologizing, and that contextualization has supported my forgiveness process.
Oh, that's so beautiful. You touched on so many important things. And one is that I really believe that our ancestors are living through us. And as we continue to do the healing work and the unpacking work, I see it in my own family too, like how I had such a tumultuous relationship with one of my parents. And now I'm like, oh, I like you. I want to take you out. I want to hang out with you. Of course, boundaries, because the thing is that sometimes our ancestors, we could do all of the healing that we want. Some of them can be stuck in their own ways, but it's just that light that's peeking through that I'm like, wow, I really understand this. When we do the work, we really do heal our parents and our lineage. Like, I always just thought that was a saying until you actually spend time with your parents. And I see that. I've been vegan for about 6 years, and I get so excited when my mom like makes vegan food. I'm like, oh, okay, this is going somewhere. So it is a lot of inner child healing, and it's recognizing where our cultural background and the things that we uphold as normal in our household also are not being put to the forefront of danger. Por ejemplo, when you said, you know, it's like your deal that does X, Y, and Z, but yet the parent still makes you greet them.
Yep.
Because that's a sign of disrespect. And like, how dare you get up, go give your tia a kiss, or, you know? And so I think this is so specific to our culture. This is so specific to where we come from. And it takes really beautiful beings like yourself who are doing this work. And so let's get into some of the work that you're doing right now. And what do you find is the most helpful when people come to you?
Well, I'll share that there's three different kinds, I would say, of people that come to Latinx parenting. And the first is obviously parents who identify as Latino, Latina, Latina, Latinx, however you want, Hispanic, however you want to identify that. It's really communicating that culture is a part of this, right? That this specific culture is a part of the parenting reflections that I don't see in the parenting books, except for the one I'm writing.
Book coming in soon.
The second group, I would say, are former Latinx children, right? So people who are really interested in the reparenting work, people who are interested in the inner child connection, establishing an inner parent, right? And also having that cultural component really honored, the ancestral component really honored. And then there's professionals. There's people that want to be trained in more decolonial, more liberatory ways of engaging with clients, right? With people who they work with, either their clinicians or their teachers, some other form of educator, parent, other parent educators. And so depending on who they are, honestly, I think the message is pretty consistent. And I've always said, like, my goal is not to change anybody's mind about how they parent or how they were parented. Like, it's not my goal to be some kind of, like, I don't know, statistics person and be like, look, you know, like, all those statistics are important, but I think for me, in the spaces that I show up in, whether it's with parents or just individuals or professionals, the invitation is, let's operate with our hearts, right? Let's open our hearts. It's like, I don't want to change your mind. I want us to come into this relationship with open hearts as much as we can, because I can understand you and I can understand myself and I can understand from that place of vulnerability and connection. Trust is established, right? A trusting relationship is established. And through that trusting relationship, then we can do some work. You know, then we can really get into it.
Yeah. And it just reminds me that, you know, so many of us are doing this work and it's really through the heart portal. This is a conversation about healing. This is a conversation about love. This is a conversation about breaking generational cycles. And that is so important to this work. And I just love that you brought in that no shame. There's no shame. There's no judgment. There's just us coming together and asking ourselves, where do we go from here? And how do we make it better? And somebody has to have that tough conversation, right? And it gets to be us, and it gets to be you through your work and your book and you educating and you stepping forward and saying, you know what? No mas, right? Because we don't need more hurt beings. We need to cultivate more love energy between all of us. And there doesn't have to be a right and wrong side. There just needs to be unity. And honestly, energetically, the planet has already shooken us up in order for us to do this work, because nothing matters. And this is why, like, I love talking about money too, because it's so triggering to people. The same way it's so triggering to people when you talk about their parents. And by the way, I'm going to raise my hand because that was me. In my 20s, that was me. That was me bitching up to my sisters because we have a close relationship and we're like, mommy, daddy did this, blah, 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 blah. And then the minute anybody said anything about them, I was like, but no, what do you mean? No, they were great. And of course they were. But this is an acknowledgement. That's all. This is just an acknowledgement. This is not a bypassing. This is what it was. It's all good. What do we learn from it? And how do we continue to create that healing process? ¿Verdad?
Yeah. I mean, at some point we had access to that, you know, like at some point we understood what mutual exchange was, you know, like we understood things outside of the colonial systems of the typical way that we think about capitalism or the typical way that, you know, messages about gender roles get passed down, you know, patriarchy, religious influence. Like there was something before that.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, and something that's been made very clear is that we actually cannot work from within the systems of oppression. Like we have to completely replace them with ancestral systems that we are restoring.
Wow. I mean, mic drop.
And those are systems of liberation, you know, and it begins with that internal liberation to say, I am sacred. I am deserving of sustenance. I am deserving of health, of being held by other people, of being supported, of seeing my value or seeing my work valued, not being exploited anymore. I think for people like you and I, Latinx, BIPOC folks, this is especially important because there's so much to undo, right? I don't have generational wealth. Like,
yeah. Like, they're creating it.
No, now. Exactly, you know, and recognizing the privilege that comes with that, but it's like we can also be very intentional about the way that we wield that privilege, you know, and who we support with that privilege and what that is going to do for generations moving forward.
So beautiful. I always say we have to take care of all of our bodies, our spiritual body, our physical body, our mental body, and our emotional body. We deserve to be safe. We deserve to be happy. We deserve to be whole. We deserve to have wealth, not just physical green money, but wealth in all areas of our life, abundance and prosperity. And that's why, you know, you're doing this work, you know, that's so beautiful and so nourishing to our soul. I do the work around money because, you know, so often I grew up as a TV producer for 13 years, I saw everybody have money around me. And I just always had this like, oh, but yeah, they deserve it. Or, yeah. It's because they're light skinned. Yeah. It's because I don't have it. You know, I have to stay later. I'm the brown one. And then I'm a lesbian. Oh my God, I have so many strikes against me. And it's like, no, I get to do this work. And you know what happens? This is that we only want to pour back into our communities. I was the first person to create a BIPOC LGBTQ business wellness event last year, and we gave away 10% of all of the proceeds to a nonprofit, Stonewall. That's a big pillar in New York for being the first gay parade. Everybody that came to speak, whatever their speaking fee was whatever we paid. We didn't negotiate with other Black and Brown and Indigenous people who wanted to showcase their work. That's what we get to do. And so it's really about community work. It's about community care. And I'm so thankful that you're here. I know that I feel like we could talk forever, but what's one thing you want to leave our listeners with? And please let us know how they can follow you, how they can find you, how they can work with you. This has been such a treat. Un placer, yeah.
I want to leave folks with, I think, just a reminder that you're sacred. you know, and that you deserve everything that comes with that sacredness. One of my teachers, Maestro Jerry Deo, he's the founder of the National Compadres Network, and that's his book, is Recovering Your Sacredness, you know, and I always anchor back into that, is that I am just as innocent, just as worthy of love, just as beautiful as I was from the moment that I was in my mother's womb. And thereafter, you know, and everything that happened after does not negate my sacredness. So I would just want people to be reminded of that and to operate from that space and to recognize that all children are sacred, including your inner child.
Oh, so beautiful. Thank you for reminding us of that. And this is what I call our quantum being, you know, because we have our physical being, but there is this also majestic quantum highest self version of us that's connected to the totality of the universe. And I always love to remember, where was I before here? Right? Like, have we thought of that? Like, where were we before we entered into these bodies? And we were perfection, and we were pure consciousness, and we were pure energy of love. And we are still those things, no matter what happens in this physical earthly realm. They are truly just opportunities for us to continue to refine and refine and refine. Oh, so beautiful. Please let us know your social media handles. If anybody wants to work with you, what is it that they would do to take the next?
So I encourage everybody to visit our Instagram. That's really where I think we have the most following right now. TikTok popped off and I was like, another thing to do. But we're there also. We're on Facebook as well and Twitter, but I think primarily Instagram. And we have a platform called Escuelita, which is also a membership community. You gain access into Escuelita by buying any of the courses, and you can visit latinaexperienting.org/Escuelita to see all of the offerings. I have classes and workshops and courses and trainings on ending chancla culture, which I'm sure we'll get into a separate time. And
this part two, because that's a whole other thing.
1 pound, girl. I'm down. That's what the book is about, actually. It's called Chancla. It's about where some of these parenting practices came from. It's addressing all the systemic stuff, but also the practical things like reparenting. And so, yeah, everything that goes into that, you'll find probably a course that refers to that specific thing. And I encourage everyone to look into it and subscribe to our mailing list. We have stuff happening all the time.
Oh, so beautiful. Thank you so much. This will be the end, humans. Go follow Leslie. She's such a beautiful, amazing being, such a light being. And I'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you.
Breathe.